C2SP. Number 7B.
Jesus cast out evil spirits or false beliefs. So what she has said before, the Christian Science also goes to the ground of everything and casts out beliefs. So did Jesus. He cast out evil spirits. At that time they were called evil spirits, or today we call them false beliefs. The Apostle Paul bade men have the mind that was in the Christ. So we get here the method, what can cast out false beliefs. It says it's the mind of Christ. The mind of Christ. And we will see that mind of Christ will play an important part right through that second part. But we always go back first to mind, which is the truth about everything. So Jesus did his own work by the one Spirit. So he didn't have the divine mind and human beliefs. He had only one, the one Spirit, which means one mind. He said, my Father worketh hitherto, and I work. So he gave everything back to the origin and says, the Father worketh, and through reflection, I work too. He never described disease. So we come back to the line one, that the act of describing disease is not scientific. Now, Jesus is the scientist. He never described disease, so far as can be learned from the gospel, but he healed disease. So we see here those two methods of mind. The one false method is the method of spiritualism that relies on beliefs and therefore describes disease. So every time we describe disease and its symptoms and its locality and fatality, we believe that the disease is something at some place in some person and has some form, whereas the scientific method is to heal it, to go back to the mind of Christ and not look at the symptom, because the divine mind cannot see disease, cannot see symptoms, cannot locate them. In the divine mind, all is mind and mind's ideas. So she goes on again and says, the unscientific practitioner says, and you see we have always a comparison between science and spiritualism. So the unscientific practitioner says, you are ill, your brain is overtaxed and you must rest, your body is weak and it must be strengthened, you have nervous prostration and must be treated for it. Then comes science, after the unscientific practitioner. So the unscientific practitioner actually does not uncover reality. He uncovers only, or he sees only, or he talks only about the phenomena that is seen, not about the noumenon. Whereas science objects to all this, contending for the rights of intelligence and asserting that mind controls body and brain. And you see, the scientific practitioner goes back to mind and says, what does mind know about the situation? And the divine mind knows only that it controls every situation. So it doesn't need to know the name of the disease, the locality of disease, the fatality of a disease, the symptoms of a disease. You have two different ways of looking at the same thing. Looking at the same thing, what is the same thing here? Disease, discord, whatever we can call it, evil spirit or evil beliefs. How do we look at it? The Christian Scientist looks at it from the point of view of the divine mind, with the mind of Christ, with that mind which Jesus had. The spiritualist, the mentalist, perhaps I could call it here the mentalist, though she speaks also about spiritualism, does the very opposite. It looks at the phenomena. The Christian Scientist goes out from the divine noumenon. So that gives the whole picture first of mind, showing that both endpoints have an effect, either a good effect or an evil effect, but they have effects. And this is a point we have to remember, or we will never understand the next subject of spirit, which sometimes overturns the Christian scientists a bit. Namely, we come to spirit where it is said, or it is not said, I have written here as an epitome, the science of mind derives its strength from the apprehension of truth. So the central point is the strength of spirit, whereas spiritualism derives its strength from mysticism. Meaning, as you can see right from the epitome, that the central subject is strength. What has strength? What has force? Has only the mind of Christ force, or has spiritualism also a force? And the point is that both have a strength or a force. And one has to see if that the same phenomena, namely strength and force, can have two very distinctly different origins. With Christian science, with mind science. So mind science teaches that mortals need not to be weary in well-doing, that they can go on in well-doing and well-doing and go on and on without really wearing them out in well-doing. It dissipates fatigue in doing good. And it's actually so, the moment we are very deeply concerned with a spiritual mission, with a spiritual job, we always gather our strengths again. Even if the body says, I'm weak or I'm tired, the moment we talk about spiritual things and have to deal with spiritual things, we always see that spirit is strength and that it can never wear out. Giving does not impoverish us in the service of our Master, neither does withholding enrich us. So this is just strengthening what I said before. The side note is divine strength. And explains now again that strength through the main tone of mind and truth, namely we have strength, spirit, in proportion to what? Our apprehension of truth, mind and truth. The more we understand mind and truth, the more we can go out in our consciousness from the divine mind and contemplate the truth, the more strength we have. And our strength is not lessened by giving utterance to truth. Again, giving utterance to truth. Something else is, a cup of coffee or tea is not the equal of truth. Whether for the inspiration of a sermon or for the support of bodily endurance. Well, we know how often we are spiritualists, many of us, I included. I like a cup of coffee in the morning to wake me up and be a bit more on top than otherwise. I still believe a little bit in a coffee. Spiritualism. But when it comes to my work and to give a summer school, I don't think that the coffee will give a good lecture, but then I know that the mind of Christ has the strength to do it and the endurance to do it. And give bodily endurance. So we have a comparison. Both say, I give strength. The cup of coffee says, I give you strength. And the apprehension of truth says, I give you strength. And I give strength to the for bodily endurance. But naturally we know that the one is not good enough, that coffee does not equal the apprehension of truth. Still, we know ourselves too well to be honest about it. That we make a concession to something we shouldn't really make it, namely to coffee. Yeah. Communication now, she goes on with that strength. This is just a simple example, and as we go on, we understand perhaps then the spiritualistic example better. A communication purporting to come from the late Theodore Parker reads as follows. Theodore Parker had a very rationalistic view on the Bible, and he didn't believe in spiritualism. And he said, there never was and there never will be an immortal spirit. And this very sentence appeared in a periodical of the spiritualists, yet the very periodical containing this sentence repeats weekly the assertion that spirit communications are our only proofs of immortality, so that spirits really give us the power to become immortal. So she says, I entertain no doubt of the humanity and philanthropy of many spiritualists, but I cannot coincide with their views. So she said, spiritualists may be very nice people, and I have nothing against the spiritualists as people. I have something against the views of spiritualists. Namely, and now she comes back to the question of spirit as strength, namely, it is mysticism which gives spiritualism its force. So it is mysticism at the basis, can you see, not the apprehension of truth, not mind and truth, but mysticism, the counterfeit of mind, gives spiritualism its force. It gives strength. It has power. It gives the power, really, for the many spiritualistic phenomena. Science, again now, the other side, science dispels mystery and explains extraordinary phenomena. So the extraordinary phenomena that the spiritualists bring about by showing that they can really use mental forces on material things, and moving material things through mental forces, that these extraordinary phenomena can be explained through science, so that they are not mystical. You know, in the next two paragraphs she comes back to that, so I can go on. But science never removes phenomena from the domain of reason into the realm of mysticism. So she first here really explains that there are phenomena where spiritualism shows that mental forces can bring about an effect, and usually an effect in the material world, like removing a material object and things like that, that they can do that. But science says these are not extraordinary phenomena. We can easily explain that. We can explain that they are not really wonders. But science never removes these phenomena, these extraordinary phenomena, from the domain of reason, says they are not explainable. They are explainable, and therefore we just have to use reason and explain them, and do not have to take recourse to mysticism. Therefore, and now she gives such examples of the force of mysticism against the strength of spirit. She says, it should not seem mysterious that mind, with a small m, which is naturally the mortal mind, the human mind, without the aid of hands, can move a table. So this is the force to which she refers to above, the strength that she refers to. That she says, this is not mysterious what the spiritualists do when without the use of hands they can move a table. They can levate the table, they can move the table from one place to the other place without using the hands. That is not so mysterious as you think. This is absolutely explainable. When we already know, and everybody accepts that, that it is mind power which moves both table and hand. She says, look here, what makes your hand move? What is it that makes my hand move up? Is it my hand that makes it move up? Or what is it? Well, it's mortal mind. It's my mind, the human mind. My decision that I say, I want to raise my hands, so I raise them. So it is the raising of a hand, of a body, is actually mental. So I raise it because I have a mental strength and I believe that my mind, my human mind, small m, not the divine mind, that my human mind can raise a whole body up. And we think this is natural because we are trained that way. Right from birth we are trained that way, that we can move our legs, we can move our body. Naturally, biofeedback today says, well, we can remove with the mind every cell, we can remove the blood in the body, we can move every kind of thing that is in the body through mind, and that whole biofeedback is the same thing as fundamentally we use constantly, that we decide to make a step and then we make a step. We move the whole body through a mental decision. Is that mysterious? You never thought that when you're walking around, lift your hand and reach out for something, that is mysterious. You considered it very normal, the most normal thing on the world. And yet, what is it? That mind, small m, can move a body, can move matter. But we are so used to that we not even think that this can be a phenomenon, that this can be unnatural, can be mysterious. We are used that is natural. So that is all on the plane of mysticism and spiritualism. That mind, which is immaterial, can move something that is material. That's what she says here, that when we already know that it is mind power, mind small m, it's not capital M, that mind power which moves both the table and the hand. So why shouldn't we move with mind power in a spiritualistic seance a table? And they do. If you don't believe it, then go and see it. You can go in every spiritualistic seance and just see it. This is absolutely normal for them. Then she takes another example and says, even Planchet, the French toy, which years ago pleased so many people, attested the control of mortal mind over its substratum called matter. You know that Planchet, at her time, that 100 years ago, she says, even Planchet, the French toy, which years ago pleased so many people, that was at her time, well... When I was here in America about 15 years ago, this was a new cry. In every department store, you could buy a Planchet. You called it differently. You called it Ouija or something like that. Ouija or Ouija was the same thing as a Planchet, only the modern version of it. And everybody played it at home. Everybody played it. And if you play the tom and try it out, you can see how easy it is that mortal mind can move a table, a board. Huh? A planchette is a kind of a wooden board. Usually, the French ones naturally had it in the shape of a heart. There must be a heart naturally at that time. You can ask questions, you see, to the board and say, well, any question you can ask, and just by slightly touching it and correcting it, that it will give an answer, that board begins to move and can move very strongly, so strongly that it moves your hand backward and forward. And without pushing, just slightly touching, that thing begins to go around like mad, so strong. And then settles down on an alphabet and begins to spell out the message through the alphabet there. You have seen that, I bet. Haven't you lived 14 years ago? Well, I saw it here in America, not at home. And in all the department store, you could see it and buy it for $2 or $1.50 or so. Yeah. And play with it. She said it's a French toy, so you play with it. But it's quite impressive how that the board moves and gives an answer, just spells out a word in the right alphabetical order and gives an answer. Whatever the answer is, you can believe it or can't believe it. You see. She says, well, this all should not be so mysterious. There is nothing mysterious about it. So telekinetics, which is now tried out, especially in Russia, also here in America, I think especially in the Stanford Research Center, it's tried out with Uri Geller and so on, that telekinetics is something that is possible and that it is just a matter that we are no more educated in that belief. We came out since the Greek period, or at least since the Age of Enlightenment, not to believe anymore in any mental realm, only what was hard, fact, material, substance, material, matter would only be real, and we have been educated now for a few hundred years out of the belief that mind can move matter, and therefore don't believe in it, and therefore we don't practice it, and therefore it doesn't work for it. But for primitive people, it works. For primitive people, if they are primitive at all, it works, and they use that, and so for them, it's not mysterious. So spiritualistic phenomena, which show the same thing, haven't you done that? As children, when it was a rainy Sunday and we didn't know what to play and we couldn't go out, we took somehow a table and began to play planchette. And just sat around all on the table and touched it, so one to the next, and then we said, now move, now move, now move, and then suddenly we would begin to move, either to move forward or backward or upward or whatever. So this is not something mysterious. It is mysterious for the Christian scientists because they close their eye completely to the phenomena of mortal mind and of the human mind. They shut it out and say, it's nothing, it's illusion. Mrs. Eddy says on the first page, it is illusion. So it is illusion, but they do not look into the subject. And therefore they say, well, this is all, this is not real, it's not true, it's a lie. It isn't. You can try it out. It's easy to try it out. So, and it's good if to try it out. I don't see why we shouldn't try it out. Mrs. Eddy tried out spiritualism, and you know, from the various unauthorized literature, that Mrs. Eddy tried it out, and that she was quite a good medium, and could be a good medium, but she didn't want to be a medium. Just as many mediums naturally see that it is not the reality of being and get out of it. Yes, so if we see that, then we can explain really those extraordinary phenomena, which Mrs. Eddy explains and said, look here, it's nothing else than the belief of mortal mind. It attests the control of mortal mind. On line 24, there is the answer, over its substratum called matter. Now, if we see the foundation of matter, that it is a subjective state of mortal mind, that's a definition, or you can also, sometimes she defines it, matter is the objectified state of mortal mind. Well, if matter is the outcome, the objectified state of mortal mind, then certainly mortal mind has power over matter. Always the cause has power over its effect. So if matter is this subjective state of mortal mind, objectified, then it's a creation of mortal mind, and the creator has power over its creation, so that it can easily manipulate matter. We go on to the last paragraph, repeating that again. It is mortal mind which convulses its substratum matter. Can you see? It's mortal mind that convulses. Well, convulses means that it has power over, that it has force over, that it has strength over its own substratum, namely matter. These movements arise from the volition of human belief. So these are not extraordinary phenomena. They are normal phenomena in the realm of human belief. We still are in the realm of human belief. That has nothing to do with Christian Science, has nothing to do with the realm of spirit. It's its own realm. But they are neither scientific nor are they rational, because they are not scientific, in her view, because they are not derived from the science of mind. And so they are not scientific. Therefore, they are not rational. Therefore, they are not the phenomena of reality. They are phenomena of the realm of belief. Mortal mind, she says, produces table tipping. You see, you have it here again, those spiritualistic phenomena, that the table begins to waggle. Can you say to waggle and to and it makes like this? Wiggle, yeah? The table begins to wiggle, you see, and then it gives tappings on the floor. And usually you use naturally a wooden floor and not the carpeted floor. And then it works even better than you hear how it tapes. Have you never seen that? You should see that. Very interesting. On a rainy day, it's quite nice. You see, it's very interesting. I watched it once with somebody, and we just played with it, you know, just played with it. And we had somebody who was very receptive for spiritualistic phenomena, and she took just a chair and put it three legs on a carpet, and one that was then on a wooden floor, and therefore about one half an inch above the wooden floor, and she just could slightly touch the chair. Just touch it, not move it. And I asked the spirit a question, and then suddenly, after a while, the chair begins to tap. That's table tipping, that was chair tipping, huh? And begins to tap. So if it taps once, it is an A. If it taps two times, it is a B. If it taps three times, it's a C. And so it goes through the whole alphabet. So you can you can decode. If it taps two times, it's a B. If it taps 24 times, it is a Z. And the message comes through. You think it's phenomenal. Now it isn't. It is just playing around. Playing around with mortal mind, and it's quite a usual phenomenon. Nothing mysterious about it, no red lights, no darkening the room and so on. Quite right away from the dinner table you do it, or from the lunch table. So this belief rests on the common conviction that mind and matter, mind small m and matter, that they cooperate both visibly and invisibly, hence that matter is intelligent. Who does not believe that matter is intelligence? If we believe, that's table tipping. Yeah. Okay, tomorrow.